turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's chapter 18 of the book of Shemot, or Exodus. And, of course, it's a famous portion for a couple reasons. One, because it introduces the father-in-law of Moshe, actually reintroduces again. And in this case, his name is Yitro in the Hebrew, or Jethro. Of course, remember, we've heard several Jethros in modern literature. But anyway, he's a priest of Midian, it says. So chapter 18, verse 1 begins, and it says, Yitro, priest of Midian, Moshe's father-in-law, heard about all the wonderful things Yahuwah had done for Moshe and for Israel, his people, and how Yahuwah had brought Israel out of Egypt. So it says, Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had shalaked her. He had sent her away. Now, we're never told why, and presumably, of course, there's no shortage of speculation, but presumably it was because he was not sure that he was going to make it back alive or what was going to happen, how long it was going to take, so he wanted her to be safe. Possibly. Again, I'm not going to try to read anything into it other than here's the point at which he brings her back. Also, her two sons, of whom the name was one, Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land, or having to do with exile or sojourner, ger, right? And the name of the other was Eliezer, because the Eliezer, the Elohim of my father, was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Now, it says, Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moshe in the wilderness, Bamidbar, where he was encamped at the Mount of God. And he said to Moshe, I, your father, Yitro, am coming unto you and your wife and her two sons with her. So Moshe went out to meet his father-in-law, bowed down, and he kissed him. They asked each other the usual stuff, hey, how you doing? About the welfare. They came into the tent. And it says, Moshe told his father-in-law all that Yahuwah had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how Yahuwah had delivered them. And Yitro rejoiced for all the goodness that Yahuwah had done to Israel, and that he delivered them out of the hand of the Egyptians. And he said, Blessed be Yahuwah, who's delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. And then he adds this. Now, this is important. Now he says, Now I know. So the word here is yada. That's the knowing in the experiential, in the intimate sense, that Yahuwah is greater than all the other so-called gods. Yea, for that they dealt proudly against them. And Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, took a burnt offering, and he sacrifices for Elohim. And Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moshe's father-in-law before Elohim. Now, here's an interesting question. And if you read this sentence carefully, it says, Yitro came, and he took a burnt offering. Aaron came, all the elders of Israel came. And sometimes the Midrash will ask a question, where's Moses? We just kind of presume, well, he's there, right? But maybe not. Because it doesn't say that he was there explicitly, and then the next verse kind of gives us some reason for thinking that. Came to pass on the morning and the morrow that Moshe sat to judge the people, and the people stood round about Moshe from morning until evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, What are you doing? What are you doing to the people? Why are you sitting yourself all alone? All the people stand around you from morning till evening. Okay, so basically what he's saying is, wow, you are really in a heap of over your head here. Moshe then said to his father-in-law, Well, because the people come from unto me to inquire of Elohim. And when they hear a matter, and when they have a matter, and they come to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and I make known to them the statutes of Elohim and his Torot, his instruction. In this case it says Torotin. And Moshe's father-in-law said unto him, The thing you're doing is low tov. It's just not right, man. This is not good. Now, notice, he is real careful here. He does not criticize without offering a constructive suggestion or alternative. All of this, he says, is going to wear you down. But you, and not just you, but the people too that are with you, for this thing is just plain too heavy for you to bear. You're not able to perform it all by yourself alone. So hearken now to my voice. I will give you counsel. And notice how he couches the counsel. And Elohim be with you. He's not taking credit for it. He says, check this out. Ask before Yah if this is good advice or not. So, for God be with you, and be you for the people before Elohim, and bring thou the causes unto Elohim. Okay, so, if, in fact, he's going to tell him, if this is something that's in accord with his will, then do it. And here's what it is. You shall teach them the statutes and the laws, and shall show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, you shall provide out of all the people able men, such as fear Elohim, men of truth, hating unjust gain, and place over such them. In other words, put these people in positions of authority. This basically would be today called delegation of authority. So you got rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people all the seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they bring unto you, but every small matter they can judge for themselves. So that way they shall make it easier for you and help bear the burden with you. And then listen how he now finishes. He says, if you shall do this thing, and Elohim command you so, then you shall be able to endure, and all this people shall go to their place in peace. So Moshe hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law, and he did all that he'd said. And Moshe chose able men out of all of Israel, made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens, and they judged the people in all seasons. The hard causes they brought to Moshe, but every small matter they judged themselves. And finally it says, Moshe led his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. Now, there's an implied question here. I've always thought it's interesting, too. Sometimes when people leave, they use different terminology. But this one, it says, he led his father-in-law depart. He went his way into his own land. Almost kind of sounds like he was a man with a mission. So that is kind of one of the things that the Midrash will suggest. Can't argue that it's clear one way or the other, but it makes sense. He obviously had heard about this before he came. Now he knows firsthand. And certainly he has already said he knows that Elohim is greater than all the other gods. So it makes sense that that's what he is headed out to do. All right, the next chapter says, in the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. Now I want to pause here. There are two verses here that essentially lead to an interesting conclusion. Now, what's fascinating, and this is not something you often notice, but once you see it, you can't unsee it. Every time the children of Israel are referenced in the first two verses, in all the places except the last one, it's in the plural. Okay, so in the third month after the children of Israel came forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day they, plural, came into the wilderness. And when they were departed to Rephidim, and they were come to the wilderness of Sinai. By the way, the verbs, of course, that go with, in Hebrew, these plurals are also the plural form of the verbs. They encamped in the wilderness, and it says, there Israel encamped before the mount. So the Midrash suggests that there's something really important being laid out here. Of course, Rashi probably does as well. It's they up until we get to the place where they're encamped before the mount, and it is now Israel singular, which is kind of neat. Moshe went up unto Elohim, and Yahuwah called him out of the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Yaakov, and tell the children of Israel. So we see both names. Tell the children of Israel and say to the house of Yaakov. It's the same people, isn't it? Or is it? You see what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if, key word if, eem in the Hebrew, if you will hearken to my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own treasure from among all the peoples, for the earth, all of it, is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a set apart, a holy, of course the Hebrew word, kadosh, nation. And these are the words which you shall speak unto the B'nai Israel. So Moshe came and he called for all the elders of the people. He set them before them all of the words which Yahuwah commanded him. Now listen to this. This is vitally important. And all of the people, kol ha'am, all of the people answered together. And they said, all, kol again, that Yahuwah has spoken, we will do. So Moshe reported the words of the people unto Yahuwah. And Yahuwah said to Moshe, Lo, I come unto you in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you, and may also believe you forever. And Moshe told the words of the people unto Yahuwah. Now, then Yahuwah said unto Moshe, Go unto the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments. So he's getting them prepped. Be ready against the third day. For the third day, Yahuwah will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And you shall set bounds unto the people round about, saying, Take heed yourselves that you do not go up the mountain, or even touch the border of it. Whosoever touches the mount will surely be put to death. So stay clear of the mountain. This is serious. This carries a death penalty. No hand shall touch him. Now that's interesting, right? How is he going to die? Answer, he doesn't tell us, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be by the hand of man. No hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through. Shot through with what? A spear? Lightning bolt? Okay. Shot through with something. Whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. When the ram's horn sounds long, they shall come up to the mount. So Moshe went down from the mountain unto the people, sanctified the people, they washed their garments, and then he said unto the people, Be ready against the third day, and do not come near a wife. Interesting, most English translates it as a woman. The same word, of course, is Isha, and we know that in this case it would be a wife. He's not saying, because that's who you would have to come near, is a wife. Came to pass on the third day, when it was morning, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of a horn, or a shofar, and this is the first time we see the word shofar in Scripture, by the way, it's interesting, a shofar exceedingly loud, and all the people that were in the camp trembled. And Moshe brought forth the people out of the camp to meet Elohim, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. Now, Mount Sinai was altogether on smoke, because Yahuwah descended it upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the voice of the shofar sounded and waxed louder and louder, it says, Moshe spoke, and Elohim answered him by a voice. And Yahuwah came down upon Mount Sinai to the top of the mount, and Yahuwah called Moshe to the top of the mount, and Moshe went up. That word there is literally Allah. He went up. And Yahuwah said unto Moshe, Go down, charge the people, lest they break through unto Yahuwah to try to catch a glimpse, to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the Kohanim also, HaKohanim, that come near Yahuwah, sanctify themselves, lest Yahuwah break forth upon them. Now, wait a second. Let's pause there. Anything about that kind of seem odd? Think about it. Who are the Kohanim? As of this point, as far as we know, we have not heard about the Kohanim. The Levites are the ones that later on, after the unfortunate incident with the golden calf, they're going to come forward. But as of yet, we've not explicitly been told that the Kohanim are identified. But maybe they are. This certainly seems to imply somehow that there were some folks that either knew they were Kohanim, or Moshe knew, or somebody did anyway. So Moshe said unto Yahuwah, The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you did charge us, saying, Set bounds about the mountain, sanctify it. And Yahuwah said unto him, Go, get on down, and you shall come up, you with Aaron, but do not let the priests and the people break through to come up unto Yahuwah, lest he break forth upon them. So Moshe went down to the people, and he told them. And now chapter 20. Now, this is one of the probably most important, famous chapters in the book. You've heard it. It's often called the Ten Commandments. In Hebrew, the word is Devarim. And Devarim is interesting. It literally means words. Sometimes it can mean things or even sayings. So a lot of times you'll hear Hebrew speakers refer to it as the Ten Devarim or the Ten Sayings. Because, and not only that, it's kind of interesting. As you've probably noticed over the years, there's a difference in the way the Catholics will count them. As a matter of fact, if you get a Catholic Bible, you'll see one or two of them aren't in there, and they're changed. And likewise, the Hebrew understanding is a bit different as well. I always tell the story because a good friend of mine who's now passed, sadly, but was a well-known international rabbi, always said, you know, when you get to the first commandment there, which says, Ani, or actually it's Anoki, Anoki Yahuwah, that you could just put a period there. And that's the first commandment. And I've always thought that was an interesting take. In other words, I am Yahuwah Yirel. Just know that. It doesn't sound like an imperative, but it is. So I think that's kind of a neat take. Anyway, Elohim, it says, spoke all of these words. These were the words that came out of the cloud. And it begins, of course, with the one I just mentioned. Anoki Yahuwah, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, you shall have no other Elohim in my face, or al pani, before my face. You shall not make unto yourself a graven image, nor any matter of any likeness of anything that's in the heavens, hashemayim above, or in the earth beneath, haaretz, or that's in the water, bemayim, under the earth. Don't bow down to them, nor serve them, for I, Yahuwah Yirel, am a jealous El, visiting the iniquity of the fathers unto the children of the third and fourth generation of them who hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousandth generation of them that love me, and, notice the conjunction, and keep my commandments. You shall not lo tasha, or tasa, lo tisa, do not take the name of Yahuwah Yirel in vain. Et shem Yahuwah. Don't, what does that mean? Okay? Literally, the word here is to maybe bring a false report, or I like the understanding of reduce it to nothingness. Do not reduce the name of Yahuwah to nothingness. Does removing it completely and replacing it with capital L-O-R-D, does that remove it and take it and reduce it to nothingness? I can't help but think that most renderings of this maybe violate the commandment by doing exactly what he says not to do right there. I'll tell you one thing, folks, and I'm going to be a little crude, at least so far as some are concerned. This is not, repeat, not underscore exclamation point. This is not saying, you're not to say silly things like, God damn it. Because that's not his name, and it's not reducing it to nothing, and it's arguably not taking it in vain. It's invoking it as a curse. That might not be a good thing to do, but I can't help but think that if you take his real name, that is something that's far more important than some title or placeholder like God is. So his name is not God. That's part of the point. By taking his name away, we may have reduced it to nothingness. And it then goes on to say this, for Yahuwah, his real name there, and it's still replaced that with capital L-O-R-D in some books, for Yahuwah will not hold him guiltless who reduces his name to vanity, to falsehood, to emptiness, to make it nothing. And that's the first use of this word, vain, in Scripture. Remember Zakar, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it kadosh, set apart. Call it to mind, remember. There's another one. There's another one that gets violated every week by the whore church. Having taken his name out completely, then they remember his Sabbath day not, because they've changed it without any authority to do so, at least not any real authority from him, because he didn't change it, and he said he wasn't gonna. 6 days. Now this, by the way, is going to be some exclamation and explanation of what we've just heard. There's a reason why he tells us to honor the Sabbath. 6 days you do your labor, all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath unto Yahuwah Yirel. In it you shall do no manner of work. Not you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, or the stranger that's within your gates. Because in 6 days Yahuwah made Hashemayim, Vayet Haaretz, heavens and the earth, the sea, all the things that are in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore Yahuwah blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. He wants it set apart. The next command is one. Of course, this one you'll hear, it's the only command that carries a blessing. Honor your father and your mother. Doesn't say explicitly obey, it says honor. It's an interesting distinction. Honor your father and your mother, that the days, that your days may be long upon the land which Yahuwah your El is giving you. And it's actually in the present tense in the Hebrew, gives you. Then we get the sets of commands that are kind of fascinating because they're just two-word commands in the next several cases. The first one is lo tirtzach. Lo tirtzach. Tirtzach. And it's rendered as thou shalt not murder. Okay, that might be a decent way to put it in English. I actually prefer thou shalt not slay. Murder kind of cuts it, but slay gives the implication a little more clearly. This is not somebody who comes to hurt you and you end up exercising your right of self-defense. No, this is go out of your way to slay them. That is what is explicitly prohibited here. And by the way, it also is the first use in the book. Lo tirtzach. How about this one? Lo tig. Wait, so I'm going to give it the right order. Make sure. Lo tinaf. Lo tinaf. And that one is rendered as thou shalt not commit adultery. Tinaf. It's the first time that word is used, too. And understand a couple of things. Adultery always involves a married woman. It is not adultery unless it is committed with a married woman. Otherwise, it's more likely marriage or whoring or prostitution or something along those lines. Or maybe a forbidden relationship like incest. But it is only adultery when it involves a married woman. So you're not to do that. The next one, lo tignov, which is, you shall not steal. Now the question is what? Interestingly, we're going to get another commandment down here that seems to cover the case of, because it says you're not to covet. If you can't covet it, you can't hardly go to the next step and steal it. But it is often claimed by Hebrew speakers that when it says you shall not steal, what it's really talking about is people. In other words, kidnap. And that's an interesting take. I don't remember ever having heard that in a Sunday church. They usually just say, thou shalt not steal. But it almost sounds like maybe it's thou shalt not steal people because, and by the way, Yeshua makes this clear in Matthew chapter 5, the prohibition against coveting takes care of this too. The next one, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Then you shall not covet or lust after your neighbor's house. Okay, that's not all. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or lust after your neighbor's wife, nor are you lust after his manservant, his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is your neighbor's. So let's pause. The Hebrew understanding is that the thought precedes the action. In other words, if you are lusting to have what he's got, his wife, his manservant, his maidservant, his ox, or his ass, or whatever it might be that he's got, or anything that's your neighbor's, that thought precedes action. And so Yahushua's take, and he makes this clear, is, right, if you so much as look at your neighbor's wife to covet her, to lust after her, there is an equivalence there. In other words, you cannot do that without having broken this commandment. So it's an interesting way to think about it. As Paul puts it, take every thought captive in obedience. You don't even let the thought fester. The thought that I'd like to steal his what? No, take it captive. Don't do it. And another way to put it, and I like this understanding, there are things that are within someone's permitted reach. That's an interesting term. Okay, the things that are your neighbor's, his house, his wife, or his wives, or his animals, or anything that he has that's his, it's not yours. It is outside your permitted reach, so you are not to covet it, much less to take it. The next verse is fascinating. Now, that's the end of the 10 sayings, per se. Then it says, all the people perceived. No, wait a minute. It literally says in the Hebrew, that word here is roim. It's plural, the you all form of the word. They all saw. They saw the thunderings. Does that make sense? They saw the thunderings. Well, the way that some of the sages suggest that this reads, that the voice of the horn, the mountain smoking, they trembled, they stood far off. The oral tradition suggests this was something that just scared the living you know what out of them. Now, that I find eminently believable, consistent with what we see, and maybe it's a little bit more of a fleshing out of what was going on here. But this idea that people saw the thunderings has always fascinated me, because this sounds like it was something so overwhelming that it's not just that you heard it, it enveloped people. And they literally saw it. Now, the other thing I like to note is that seeing is what I call, as a nerdy engineer, a high bandwidth operation. Okay, you can, picture's worth a thousand words. You can see a whole lot of things that would take literally hours to describe with your eyes, and you can see them in seconds. So the idea is, if Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh wanted to communicate a lot of stuff to people fast, he could download it to them in some way that would almost overload their senses. And that is part of what the description seems to imply here. So maybe that explains part of the reason why they said, oh, this is too much. Just don't let that happen again. That's what we're going to see here. They then come to Moshe and they say, hey, you speak with us and we'll hear. But don't let Elohim do that anymore, lest we die. They were on a spiritual overload, it sounds like. Moshe then said to the people, fear not, for Elohim has come to test you, to prove you, that his fear may be before you, that you sin not. He wanted you to be impressed. He wanted you to get the message here. People stood far off. Moshe drew near under the thick darkness where Elohim was. The gloom almost. So this was really dark in there. Then Yahuwah said to Moshe, thus you shall say unto the B'nai Israel, you yourselves have seen, there's a reference again, that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall not make with me gods out of silver or gods out of gold. These you shall not make unto yourselves. An altar of earth you shall make unto me, and sacrifice thereon your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your shalamim, your sheep, your oxen, in every place where I cause my name to be mentioned or put. There I will come to you and bless you. And if you make for me an altar of stone, you are not to build it out of hewn stones. For if you lift up a tool upon it, you have profaned it. And profaned is in the peel conjugation. In other words, it's really, really bad. It ain't no good anymore for an altar to me. And what's interesting, the word that's rendered as tool here in the Hebrew actually says, the root word is cherev, which is sword. Okay, so a sharp tool, I guess, is what they're talking about, to literally cut or sharpen or edge or break the rock. If you do that, you have profaned it. Then it says this. Now, this is the last verse now in the portion. Nor shall you go up to my altar via steps, so that your nakedness is not uncovered thereon. By lifting your knees up, I guess. He didn't want to see the nakedness of those that are coming up to do what they're going to do at the altar.